your mouse is dead, and the computer is on life support, Benjamin Rockwell can help with that. Keeping your technology running smoothly, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
So much in store for you this week here on Computer Talk Radio. We're going to be talking about meshing. What is meshing? Well, it's kind of a new term in regards to how the scammers are attacking us. I'm going to talk about the increasing number of ghost jobs. Steve Keske, is social media a boon or a bust? And my answer may actually surprise you to some extent. Marty's going to talk about the BenQ X500i console projector, as well as some accessories for the RevCook toaster and the Earfun Air Pro 4 earbuds. Keith McCedor, he's going to talk about protecting your computer with substandard items. And we've got a number of listener questions as well. Adrian asks about mesh or network extender. Chris, if the app or service is free, how do they make the money? Ron, how do I get ahead in the tech world? And Zed, lately my online performance isn't me anymore. How do I become more authentic? Now, if you miss any of this, go to the website, computertalkradio.com. We have, just look for where it says listen here. You can also reach out to us. It says contact us today right there on the website. Again, computertalkradio.com. You can also phone me at 888-NERD, 888. That's 888-6373-888. Now, we've been hearing about this first one for a while, and this week it happened. Amazon's event happened, and it was actually all about just one thing. Amazon's Alexa is finally getting that upgrade to generative AI, or basically a deeper understanding from the Alexa side, listening to us, dealing with us, than the simple question and answer time, which we've seen for quite a while. The overall big news on this is that for existing members of Amazon Prime, it's free, instead of behind a paywall. Now, if you don't have Prime, you're going to pay $20 a month, which is nearly twice the cost of Prime. Now, I'm not sure how many people or how few people really fit into that category, considering the usual purchasers of Amazon Alexa devices are already really deep into the Alexa ecosystem anyway. So, I don't know. The only drawback is not knowing how much more data that Amazon will be collecting on you, me, and everybody else. Now, there's a company called Framework. We've talked about them in the past. These are the guys who make modular laptops that are highly customizable, even after purchase, and easily repairable, too. A great idea. I don't have one. I kind of think about it at times, but I'm not in the market so far. They announced two new products this past week. The first one is puzzling. It's a desktop that sits in what is already a pre-existing case, the Mini ITX case. It's been around for a while. And they're competing in an aggressive space. It's filled. There's all kinds of folks that are in this size space for desktops. So I'm not sure what the plans are here, but they've already sold out of the first batch. So there's a lot of people who are buying into this idea. They're thinking this is good. And okay, maybe it is. I'm not going to pass judgment against it. The exciting news is the other product. They're working on what they call the Laptop 12. Right now, they've got the Laptop 15. It's a 15-inch. The Laptop 13, a 13-inch. And then this smaller 12-inch laptop, which they say is going to fit into the budget price point, which makes Framework quite a bit more accessible to most of us. They will continue to push their name out in front of customers using something like this, which I think they still need. I'm interested enough, so there is some idea in my mind of picking up a new laptop later on in the year, and this actually might be one of the contenders. We'll see as we move along, as the hardware is finalized and we get the availability on it. Now, the future is getting closer, and this next one, this is not a good looking future. This is not a good idea at all. Now, I want you to picture yourself. You're driving along in your Jeep and you stop at a traffic light. All of a sudden, an ad pops up on your screen all about, and I cannot make this up, about extending your warranty. And you press a button and they'll connect you on up to a customer care specialist. What? What? Multiple Dodge and Jeep owners have advised that this has started, and it's not just occasional, but constantly persistent, like the scammers who call you at all hours. Every stop, there's another chance to push yet another ad. Yes, there are reports out there that every time you come to a complete stop, it's popping up. Getting in the way of you changing your music, getting in the way of seeing where you were going on the maps, getting in the way of making a phone call. This is seriously outrageous. It's annoying. I don't even know what they were thinking. Now, Stellantis, who are they? They're the makers of Jeep and Dodge and a number of other cars. They advise that this is a minor glitch and it isn't intended to be all the time. Me personally, I want to know why it would ever show up. This is a creep factor right through the sunroof. I don't even understand. Oh, wait, it's a Jeep, so it's a removable roof. You got the idea. All right, so there's a constant commentary that has been around for a number of years that goes along about how much computer servers generate heat. And how data centers have a lot of heat. And with this, with all of the hardware, with all of the different fan systems and heat sinks and all of these things, they are working to cool these systems, which costs electricity, which, of course, yeah, goes through the whole thing of, okay, to make electricity, we've got to have all of the electricity generators, which builds up more heat. All right. Flipping this whole heat idea fully around on its head, a British gas-backed trial called HETA is working on a way to distribute servers. Now, again, they're normally housed in data centers. They're going to move them across the city into our homes. Well, in Britain. But if it's successful there, we might see it shifting to here. This project has started small with only 10 units in their own employees' homes. But I like it. It seems really smart. This kind of redirection can really serve to drive down heating costs of your water. Yeah, but I like another thing that wasn't mentioned. See, data centers, typically you have a couple or a few data centers and they are duplicated and they have redundancy. And this is in scattered locations, usually in major cities, which can be expensive when we start talking about high-end commercial or industrial land and buildings. If you shift it into homes scattered hundreds of miles apart, you get an increase in reliability and data redundancy. And yes, you cooled your server for a lot cheaper than you would in a big, huge, massive data center. This last week, Apple was hit with a lawsuit in regards to their carbon neutral claims for the Apple Watch Series 9, the SE, and Ultra 2. This comes out of their reliance on something called carbon offset projects, which apparently in this case may have already been under conservation protections or already heavily forested. The idea of shifting blame through offsets has long come under fire, as it's not really changing the product to make it more ecologically sound. It's just you're kind of paying this little bribe off to somewhere else so that people don't cut down trees and stuff like that. Those bringing the lawsuit say that with these two things in mind, they would have skipped the purchase or at least expected it to be cheaper in price. Of course, this is in the court systems with Apple, who, like most any other behemoth corporation, has a couple of lawyers that are going to just stretch this out for ages. Oh, entire teams, massive, huge teams. There is one bit of good news for Keith. The latest stats are that 48% of current iPhone users are actually originally from the other side, Android owners. This has added a hold on the iPhone, as many adopters of the iPhone, after starting with one of the lower models, have been moving into the iPhone Pro series. So they start off with an SE, or they start off with one of the regular ones, and then they start plunking down more money for the Pro series. Oddly enough, over on the Samsung/Google/Android side, they are losing their own premium users faster than the lower-priced phones. Time will tell, of course, as to who wins this ongoing conflict. Coming up next, Chris asks me if an app or service is free, how do they make the money? That'll be here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off, you take really good care of your listeners.
Chris reached out to me. If an app or service is free, how exactly are they making money from my data? Chris reached out to me at ComputerTalkRadio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. Now, this kind of goes to that whole thing of if you don't know what the product is, then you are the product. If you don't know what the product is when you're going on to Google, believe me, you are the product. If you don't know what the product is on Meta, it's you. And in reality, across just about everything out there, we are the product. It's changed so much. It has evolved to a brand new level. Early on, it was just about serving up ads. It was just about driving people to the website. And yeah, okay, we're putting up ads. But, well, hey, we figured out we can start customizing those ads based on who's approaching us, who's going through our systems. And it's just like walking into a restaurant that offers free meals, and you sit down and you eat and you leave without paying a cent. And sure, it sounds great, but later on you started noticing everything around you is billboards tailored to your tastes. There are ads that are following you online. Companies you've never heard of that happen to know that you like to eat. And that is the price that you actually paid and are currently paying, and will continue to pay. That price is your data. So first up, I mean, advertising and targeted marketing. We have seen this business model for a very long time. First up, it was just delivering the ads, as I've mentioned. But then those various apps, those various websites, they start collecting basic data. And they collect data that's based off of your interests and your habits and your demographics. And this is all to sell highly targeted ads. We start thinking about Facebook. What are the things that it knows about you? If you've been on Facebook for a long time, your top 20 favorite movies are probably liked on there. And your top 20 TV shows. And you've got a lot of your friends are linked to you, and you have certain posts that you've made along the way, and you might talk a lot about cars, or you might talk a lot about watches, or you might talk a lot about computers, and your ads are going to shift to those cars or watches or computers, whatever it is. And that's just the start of this big, huge behemoth that is Meta slash Facebook slash whatever they want to call themselves next week. But that also applies across the board through Google and X slash Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat. And yeah, you've got the idea, TikTok. I mean, the app is seemingly reading our minds when they show us ads. They track your activity across websites and services. All of them. All of them. These different social media platforms have seen a gold mine. And this gold mine is just so deep and so vast, and it has more gold than you might ever imagine, because the next steps that go along with this are these various systems are selling and sharing your data with third-party companies. You want to go market to all of the people who like orange cars. Google can tell you that, and they can say, we're going to sell ads that represent your brand new orange colored car just to people who like orange cars. I mean, I'm using that as an example, but I'm sure they could. I have no doubt in my mind that they could get down to that level, because they have found ways to market just about everything. I will tell you, I go on to Facebook, and there are distinctly a number of ads that very directly target me and my fascinations and my interests, and my wife, her fascinations and interests, yeah, they are targeted separately from me. And they're across a number of these different platforms. So these different companies are selling that data to marketers and advertisers and various other data brokers who are going to compile extensive profiles on you. And this extends so much beyond just what kind of browser you're using. They go through and they can tell a number of the different websites you've gone across, where you've purchased things, where you don't purchase things. They've got your personal details, rough age, maybe even exact age. Maybe they've got your birth date. Maybe they know what your favorite color is. They've got your email address, and that's how we start getting a lot more spam. And then we move beyond this. Of course, they are enticing you in, and some of these different systems will offer you up premium features or digital goods or subscriptions, and they start building this up. I'll tell you, I started off just utilizing Amazon to get free delivery. And then, of course, now I'm in the Amazon TV business, you know, TV shows, Amazon Prime. And I've got Amazon Music in the house. And yes, I've got Amazon Alexa. And yeah, they're pushing all of these things as convenience and as just another way to bring us in and, of course, make more money. Games. They will use the data on your play habits to push targeted in-game purchases at the point in time when you are most likely to buy. Then we get into the affiliate marketing, the various partnerships, and that's all about getting just the original entity, getting a cut of the sale when they steer you towards a specific retailer. In the shopping apps, the search engines, even finance apps. I couldn't believe this. Finance apps are using this model. And all of this is going to pale in comparison to what's coming up next. And that is because they are utilizing behavioral analytics and AI training to refine their services. Every interaction that you're doing through all of these different systems is going through, and they are driving more and more ways to improve their accuracy. They're driving more and more ways to siphon out exactly what makes you tick versus me, versus my wife, versus your friends, versus whoever. they're all moving forward. And unfortunately, I think we've seen Pandora's box has been opened for a very long time. And I don't know that we're ever going to be able to put that all back into the box. I don't know that we're ever going to be able to undo all that has happened. Why do all of these different games need to know my location? It doesn't make sense. I'll tell you why. Because they're marketing to you. They're utilizing that information more and more to sell to whoever it is that's going to buy it. Even games, those harmless apps like face swapping or quizzes or Candy Crush or whatever it is, they're using your data to improve the machine learning models to, yes, turn you into a bigger consumer. All of these free apps, they aren't free. You're paying with your data instead of dollars. If you want to limit your exposure, it's very hard. You have to make sure you're checking your privacy settings. You have to be using ad blockers. You have to be very aware of every permission that you grant to all of them. Otherwise, every tap, every search, every video game you play, every swipe, every different ad that you click through and click forward on, all of this just continues to feed this invisible economy of your personal information. And I don't think we're going to ever find a way out of this, which is unfortunate. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
The phone number, 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-6373-888. That's just one of the ways you can reach out to us. I will answer your computer questions, your technology concerns. If I don't answer the phone, that's okay. Just leave a message. I will get back with you. Keith Emcedor joins me now. And Keith, what do you have for us this week?
Benjamin, protection is of the utmost importance for any computer user, but especially a Mac user.
Okay.
But I want to talk to you and our listeners about three things that I recommend Mac users never use for protection for their devices. The first
thing. Are you turning into William Shatner? Like, what is going on here?
Well, the first of which is a hard shell case on your MacBook exterior.
Okay.
And not because these can't be beneficial, because they can. The problem is that there are so many different varieties of hard shell cases that a lot of them are manufactured in a substandard method that has extra plastic and extra clips around the edges where they clamp on. And what this winds up doing, Benjamin, is it winds up creating these extra spaces that create gaps and don't allow the MacBook to close fully. Now, when it's first installed, you wouldn't notice it. But over time, as you open and close your laptop lid, you've got these extra pieces of plastic preventing the MacBook from closing from the micro-thin tolerances that Apple builds in. And when you put these on, you can actually wind up doing damage to the hinge on your MacBook. And beyond that, when you damage the hinge, there are ribbon cables in there, which can then lead to damaging the display. And that can cost hundreds upon hundreds of dollars to repair when you were just trying to protect it in the first place.
One of the brands that I preferred for a while, and I used them, I did have a MacBook Pro for a while, and it was a spec. I put spec on my iPads as well.
And they are a reputable brand.
Yeah, very reputable brand. But there's you're right. There are many, many brands out there that aren't as good.
But you can still put one of these on your iPad, and you can still put one of these on your iPhone, because there's no foldable hinge.
Yes.
You're going to be, you know, there's barely any space, barely the width, the depth of a sheet of paper that is going to allow you to close that. But when you've got a couple of millimeters of plastic around the back edge, the back edges right near the hinge of the MacBook cover, that can do serious damage. And it might not be the first time or two you open it, but over time, you can do lots of things beyond just the hinge. You can actually create a bowing in the top case where your display is, and you can take the covers off after, you know, 6 months to a year, and you'll notice that they no longer close flush anymore.
Yeah.
Now, another thing, and you might go to a trade show or a convention, and they're giving out all types of tchotchkes, like, you know, keychains or USB flash drives with their names on them. And a lot of places now have taken to giving out these slidable camera covers for your laptop.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've seen those. I've used them on a few occasions, but I would not use them on any time when there wasn't enough tolerance. I used one on one of the regular Macs, not on the on the MacBook for a while. I found that they lose... after a while, they tend to fall off. It's like, why am I even bothering when I can just grab a post-it note and just use that? And that's precisely the direction I've gone in for many years now.
I know. I have an older MacBook that I just have a piece of black electrical tape right at the top of the bezel. It's an older MacBook that I only use for audio editing. I don't use it for anything web-based because it's too old. But the reality of it is this is another device, because it's, while it's super thin, it's still like a millimeter to a millimeter and a half thick, and it could be just enough to cause damage over time.
Yeah.
In fact, because of its placement on the screen, what you can actually wind up doing is actually causing damage to the screen, where you'll either get lines in your display where the pixels don't illuminate properly anymore, or you could actually just crack the glass right in and of itself.
Yeah.
And that's a problem as well.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people who are concerned that, oh, well, you know, there could be spyware or malware on my computer, there is a green light that is typically on 99.9% of the time when the webcam is on. And that should indicate to you that your webcam is in use, whether you think it is or not. Now, you could potentially have a hacker who could turn off that green light if they are that sophisticated. But one of the things you can do is you can go under the Apple menu, go into system settings on your newer Mac, system preferences on your old one, go into the privacy and security settings, and then you can go under camera, and then it will tell you all of the applications on your machine that have access to your camera turned on. And if there are any that you don't recognize, you can turn them off, disable them, or remove them altogether. And that is something I wholeheartedly recommend investigating.
Very good, valid.
You really should know what's going on inside your own computer. Third, and definitely not least, is a keyboard skin. And for similar reasons to the hard shell case and the other, the camera cover, I don't recommend that users put a keyboard skin on, beyond the fact that, again, you're adding an extra layer of thickness to your screen. But another reason is that these are typically made of silicone or some other types of rubber material, and the oils from your fingerprints are going to get into them over time. And then this is going to be touching your screen, and you're going to start etching in the shapes of the keys into your screen over time.
Yeah. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Sidor.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
Website computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today. We're more than happy to assist you with any of your computer questions, your technology concerns. Marty Winston joins me now. And Marty, what do you have for us this week?
Well, let's start with a projector that's kind of cool. This is from BenQ. It's their X500i console gaming projector with built-in Android TV. Now, if you've got Wi-Fi, Android TV lets you watch a lot of streaming. The X500i from the BenQ series gaming projector family sports 2200 lumen brightness.
Okay.
It's a 4K ultra-high def projector with HDR, which is high dynamic range, several game modes. It is not ultra show, no ultra, just short throw. So if you've got a 100-inch wall or a screen 5 feet away, or 150-inch at 9 feet, the picture's there. It has vertical and horizontal keystone correction. Trapezoidal thing, right?
Yeah.
Got some symmetrical placement of 5-watt built-in speakers for good spatial audio. It's got 20,000-hour life expectancy for its 4-LED light source.
Okay.
That's 2 years and 2 years and 3 months. If you're there 24/7, I don't know any shows that are that good, but you can get up to 30,000 hours in the eco mode, all in a totable unit that measures less than 5 by 10 by 15 inches, weighs less than 8 pounds, and it's about $1,500.
Okay. That sounds pretty cool. I go back. One of the first projectors I was involved with purchasing was back in 98 or so.
Oh,
19
so
already is rough, but
electric arc and
it put out 800 lumens, and from memory, I think we paid somewhere around $12,000 to $15,000 for it. Yeah, that was back when you had to have a specialty guy come out.
I've got about 20 flashlights to put out that much. I'm going to get that money out of you back then. Now, speaking of things that can get hot.
Okay.
The best toaster I've ever reviewed, and we reviewed it here, is the RevCook R180, the Kinect Plus. It's a superlative toaster. Got more modes and more adjustments than you can imagine. It will accurately predict the color of the toast at the setting you have there.
Okay.
Different kinds of bread, swirl bread, different size bagels, all that, right? Well, it's the smartest toaster we've ever seen. It's on screen settings, just brilliant, perfect, agile, everything. But there were two significant accessories for it that they hadn't gotten to me at the time.
Yeah.
I've had since. I've had a chance to use them. Oh, boy. The first is their panini frame. It is marvelous.
Oh, okay.
In fact, I had a grilled cheese at lunch using that.
Nice.
You just put your sandwich in it, clamp it in. The whole frame slides in one of the toaster slots. There's a specific mode for it. You choose your doneness, mm-hmm. and it comes out and whistles at you. You come and get it, and you've got the stripes on. It's just gorgeous. It's delicious and gorgeous. Now, by the way, I no longer pull out a frying pan when I need grilled cheese.
Yeah, I can imagine that. That actually is probably pretty good because you're not using as much oil or butter with it. So, yeah,
absolutely true. Now, the other thing that it came with, and this is just connect the dots, stupid brilliant.
Yeah,
is a warming rack, and it fits some other toasters too. That goes over the top with kind of grill wires. So if you want to warm a muffin or a pastry that you got,
okay,
you put it on there, mm-hmm. you choose that mode on the toaster, and
it brings it up to a nice warm level versus the you know, full toasting it.
Putting it in a slot at the top. It's like campfire warm.
Exactly.
Now, the toasty press is about $80, the warming rack about $30.
Okay.
I have to say that projector gets a little warm, but
how warm does it get?
You can touch it, you can hold it.
Okay,
the top of the toaster. Let me get one more thing in about a minute.
Sure.
The Earfun Air Pro 4 Ultra ANC, automatic noise canceling earbuds.
Yeah.
Now, if you just use earbuds as harvesting machines for making earwax candles, these are on the other end of the spectrum.
Okay.
There's adaptive automatic noise canceling, lossless audio, sweat and water resistance. They can wirelessly charge, connect multiple devices all day, meaning 11 hours on a full charge.
Okay.
And there's some tricks in it that improve call quality. Does that sound like fun? These are Earfun Air Pro 4 Buds. I'm seeing them online for $90. Okay. By the way, that 11-hour charge is something their case can renew.
Yeah.
It's a rechargeable case to a rated total of 41 hours. And there's only one reason to be on the phone that long when you're on hold for technical support.
Yeah, that's about accurate. I've been there many times. Not so much with the earwax thing. Although when you said that, the images of the movie Shrek came to mind. As you know, he's building the candle, and just pulls it out of his ear and just drops it there. Oh man! So we got in a lot there: a projector and some toaster accessories and earbuds.
It's a busy day for us.
Yeah, sounds like it. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. We've got, of course, plenty more coming up next here on Computer Talk Radio. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade. But I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground, Ultrahighdef.com. The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. And they've got all kinds of tricks up their sleeves. This week, I want to talk about the idea of mishing. What is mishing? Well, okay, it's a new category. Or actually, it's more of a broader encompassing category that covers a few different realms, all revolving around mobile. Now, we step back. Let's go back. This is well over 20 years ago. We used to refer to all of the malware, that's the current broader term of viruses and Trojans and ransomware and everything, and we kept on putting things in under malware. But back then, we would just refer to it as a virus. Whether it was a Trojan or a virus, the only people who really understood the difference between the two were the really nerdy folks. I was one of them. The folks who decided we were going to draw a distinction about whether it was a self-propagating item or it was simply a file that was a Trojan horse that once you ran it, it would do its damage. But it didn't propagate on its own. It had to be intentionally set. So, in this case, mishing is a new term that is really a broad term. It references all of the different areas that involve mobile. So, this isn't like phishing, which relies on email or even through phone calls. Mishing is truly mobile specific. We're talking about SMS messages. We're talking about vishing, utilizing voice attacks over. Well, let me back up. Smishing is the first term. That's the SMS messages or text messages, which are designed to trick you into revealing things. Vishing is a voice call, again, through your mobile phone, and maybe will be associated to some extent with some level of links and some level of trickery along the way. And then there's also another form, which we've talked about in the past, and it's called quishing. And that's the rise of the usage of QR codes that are malformed, maliciously formed, I should say. They're set up to track you over, send you on over to something like basically a fake login page where you're going to enter in credentials. They're looking to utilize the QR codes to trap you versus whatever else, which is rather unfortunate when you consider how many restaurants, how many different locations utilize QR codes to spread the word about their company, about their services, about everything they've got going on. Look, all the way down, every single one of these falls in under that mobile use, all encompassed under that big grand term of mishing. We're going to be hearing a lot more about this in the coming months, and then it's going to drift away, mostly because I think this may also wind up being one of those terms which is just a little too geeky, a little bit too wonky for most of us. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with TheRadioFactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.
Can't find out what to buy at the computer store? Benjamin Rockwell's got the answer. And now, with the quest of enriching your experience with computers, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. This is radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact you, me, and all of our lives. The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. The phone number, 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-6373-888. Making good on our promise for radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and so forth is Steve Keske, who joins me now. And Steve, what do you have for us this week?
Well, I was doing a little research and things.
Yeah.
And I cannot really comprehend whether social media is a boon or a bust.
Interesting. Okay. So, I mean, if we go back years ago when Facebook was just brand new on the scene, we could have said it was a fad. We could have said it was something that it was just the latest, but it was going to fail fairly soon.
Right.
We had other variations on that same thing prior to it, things like MySpace and a few others that also had come along. They were around for a year or two, and then they just kind of faded away. When they did Facebook, It was done differently, and it was done with a lot of different drivers in mind and a goal. I don't know when he actually planned putting in advertising, when he planned making this into a giant behemoth. And I don't know how much of that was accidental. But whatever happened along the way, all of the people going on out and becoming big, huge social media stars on Facebook, but also on many of these other associated platforms, whether we're talking about YouTube or Instagram or Snapchat or and the list goes so far and so deep.
Oh, yeah.
The amount of social media platforms that are out there is huge because of the success
of Facebook.
So as an individual thing, I would say that Facebook and some of these others, it's a boon to them. It is something that's going to go very well. For every single one of those, for every different variation on the theme that we see, there are so many more that have gone bust, that didn't succeed.
Yeah.
And we can draw a parallel.
Yeah.
Bitcoin, it's doing wonderful. Okay? There's no denying that. There are thousands upon thousands of cryptocurrencies which have failed.
Yeah.
At the same time. And Bitcoin, I don't play around in the Bitcoin space. I know you don't. As a matter of fact, nobody on the nobody here at Computer Talk Radio does, because it is something where people can jump in, and if they jump in at the wrong time, they lose money, and it is a scary proposition for a lot of people. So
I don't gamble that much.
I get it. You know, it's to me, I look at it as it's currency speculation.
Right.
And it's currency speculation that is, well, we're getting off onto another different direction. Let's get back to social media.
But social media, to me, you know, I look at it from a personal thing, not the companies out there, mm-hmm. but is it a, you know, so many kids are out there, so many teenagers,
yeah,
so many young adults in their 20s and in their 30s are on social media.
Sure.
Is it a boon or a bust? I mean, is it good for them or is it bad?
Yes.
yeah, that's about that's the conclusion I came to. Yeah,
there is a socialization aspect to social media. If done properly, can be very good for people.
Oh, that's right.
During COVID, we saw a lot of people connecting up with friends in places like Facebook and so forth. And keeping up with each other and communicating there, that really helped us get through a portion of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, it all depends on how much people get involved with it. If they go chasing after all of these likes, they have this tendency to put up a false persona, which is not good.
No.
They have a tendency to go into different directions with social media that become obsessive. And
yeah.
And along with those obsessions, there is a certain level of, I'm struggling for the right words, imbalance in one's life.
That's true. One of the things that I happen to fall into is a research of a situation where people go out there and create profiles and are talking to AI and not human beings anymore.
Yeah, now that's outside of social. Well,
it's social media.
Mostly outside of social media.
People involved.
Yeah.
And it's a spinoff of Facebook and all of the rest. It's just one more spinoff. And I'm questioning, I'm saying, why would somebody want to do that?
Yeah.
It's hard to define whether it's good or bad because that's more or less on a personal one-to-one basis.
Sure. And even it's not even a one-to-one basis, a one-on-one basis, individualized thing. There are my going on to Facebook, and I do it about, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes a day, just to keep track of my friends and how things are going in their lives, especially with friends who were, I was friends with them for a number of years in Southern California. I'm no longer in Southern California. So that kind of allows me to keep touch with how their world is going.
Right.
I might not see a number of them again ever, but it allows me to keep interest in them. Now, if I had spent 2 hours a day, if I was going to bed and the last thing I did before going to sleep was spend half an hour on Facebook or an hour on Facebook, and then the first thing I did when I got up in the morning was another half an hour to an hour on Facebook, that's not healthy.
That's not healthy. No, and you see, it's the same thing as like when I was growing up, they said, oh, well, you're making these phone calls, you know, and you know, doing all this and, you know, keeping in touch with relatives and friends.
Yeah.
How much time are you spending on the telephone? is it keeping you from doing other socialization and all that kind of stuff? So I understand the negative side, but also the positive side.
Sure.
So yeah, that's why I was in a big quandary. boom or bust.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've got about a minute left. Are you on any social media platforms?
No.
Okay. I didn't think you were. I know you're legally blind, and I imagine so. You haven't loaded Facebook up on your smartphone or anything. Okay, and that's okay. Yes. Because look, if people can avoid going there or can constrain their usage, then that is actually a better thing. A lot of what Facebook has done is they've worked to make it more addictive.
Yes.
To make it more of a draw for you to come back. They give you all kinds of reminders throughout the day. Hey, somebody just posted this. Hey, somebody just posted this real key thing.
Nothing.
And they pretend like they're a big, huge news thing. And in a way, they are for your friends, but... Yeah, I don't know.
I know.
Yeah. As for now, my name is Benjamin Rockwell. That is Steve Keske. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with a lot more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall-mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. Zed reached out to me. Lately, I feel like the version of me that exists online isn't really me anymore. What do I do? Zed reached out to me at computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. Now, Zed, this is actually an assumed name, or rather, not really an assumed name. I renamed this contact to Zed, and the reason for this is they are... somewhat of a famous social media personality. And they actually expressed their feel that they think I'm more authentic, and their strive is to achieve the same. Now, I'm going to read this question over again. Lately, I feel like the version of me that exists online isn't really me anymore. My social media, my old posts, and even my professional profiles feel like they belong to a different person. How do I rebuild my digital identity to match who I really am? This is a problem that we have seen over the years as social media has been built up, has been just designed to move everybody in and follow all kinds of these different social media personalities. A number of them have stepped back and said, wait a second. I'm putting in a lot of effort for this. I'm doing a lot of different things, and this isn't really me. And they've started to get very uncomfortable with it. And there is, of course, there's that whole thing. For me, I grew up with the whole lesson of once you start to tell lies, once you start to go down the avenue of pretending that you're something that you aren't, it gets very hard to go on back to undo all of those lies. I mean, you can continue forward, but then you have to remember all of those lies. You have to really go forward, and you have to keep on pretending, and you don't want to pretend. Nobody wants to pretend, because eventually all of that starts to fall apart. In this case, I know that it's like looking at an old yearbook photo. I mean, you might open it up and you might recognize yourself, but it's a version of you that no longer fits. Online identities have a way of freezing us in time. And even as we grow, we change part of our lives, we change careers, or we shift perspectives, whatever it is, we need to be careful about this. When your digital self no longer reflects who you are, it can feel awkward, it can feel outdated, it can feel not quite right. But there is some good news. You can rewrite your online presence. And this is a tricky thing. And some people succeed in it, and some people go scorched earth and they ruin the entire thing. I'm going to tell you, first off, you need to go forward. If you're encountering this, and anybody who's going through this, I'm going to say this to everybody. We should always be considering this. We need to be auditing our digital footprint. We need to go forward and we need to see ourselves as the world does. We need to Google ourselves. We need to go through all of our social media posts, forgotten blog entries, our outdated bios. We need to check all of our major online accounts, and we need to figure out what needs updating, what needs deleting, what needs correction, and what should be eliminated. We should be going through our social media history and see if our past posts reflect who we are now, and even perhaps even then. And if you see that the online persona that you've built is not honest, it's not genuine, it's not authentic, you need to clean house. And part of this is going through and checking on all of those. You're going to update your bio. You're going to update your profile pictures. You're going to check that all of your pinned posts reflect your current self. And that does mean archiving or deleting content that no longer aligns with who you are, whether we're talking about values or interests or personality. You need to be very intentional with what you're doing with future posts as well. This is all part of curating how you are presented to the world. Don't just maintain an image. You want to share things. You want to post things. You want to have things up there that genuinely represent you. As long as you're doing this, as long as you're rebuilding your identity out there, all the way across the board, every social media platform, and I don't care if it's Meta or X or Facebook or Twitter, as you might also know them, or LinkedIn or any of the different platforms, all of them, they need to be rebuilt towards honesty. I would not say rebuild it towards what, I've got to be very careful. I don't want you to rebuild it towards what you want people to see. I want you to rebuild it towards who you are. And that takes work. That takes effort. And you need to define yourself on your own terms rather than letting the old profiles do it for you. You need to put it so that you are defining yourself in an honest way. And that means moving everything that is in your online persona towards accuracy. You need to ask yourself, does the way I interact online match how I am in real life? How I want to be seen in real life? If you have an online persona that feels like a performance, you need to shift it towards authenticity. You need to post about real interests. Not just what gets engagement, not what gets followers, not what gets all of these different people looking at your posts. You need to make sure that it's accurate. And you need to be thinking about all of the different digital spaces that you're in. And you need to see if they reflect who you are or if they are just that old version of yourself that no longer seems to be who you are. And this means you're controlling your narrative and you're doing this before someone else comes along. And yes, this is a pivot. This is a change in how you've been treating everything. You need to go through and you need to be thinking about everything along the way. And part of this may be overhauling every single one of your accounts to the point where you are rebranding, where you are going forward and you are setting up brand new pictures, brand new colors, brand new statements, brand new likes and dislikes and everything else. The person who owns your identity is you. And because of that, you need to go through everything. You need to abandon those past posts and you need to make sure that it is according to who you are and not the perception of other people and not the algorithms and not all of this different stuff that you've built up over the course of perhaps many years. And this is not easy. No matter how I spell this out, no matter what I've given you here, no matter what I've said, all of this is hard. But of course, some of the best things in life are hard to achieve. They're hard to do. But there's so much reward on the other end. Rebuilding your online identity is like renovating a house. You don't have to actually demolish everything, but you do need to make sure that you put new coats of paint everywhere that it needs. You need to make sure that some areas are gutted entirely. You need to think about all of the different things that make that house represent you far more. The goal should be for all of us, anybody on social media, it shouldn't be about creating a perfect digital self, but one that's filled with authenticity, one that grows with you, that evolves with you, rather than trapping you in any kind of past. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Adrian reached out to me. His basic question, mesh or network extender? He reached out to me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. I will answer your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. And in Adrian's case, yes, it was basically that, a mesh or network extender. And I will tell you that I have worked with both. I've worked with network extenders since back far back in the early days of network extenders. And they were good when that's what we had. They were good during the early mesh days. However, today, if anybody were to reach out to me and say that, what Adrian did, I would steer them as much as I could towards the idea of a mesh network. And that's because the mesh network these days is pain-free. It is seamless. It just tends to work. A network extender does require some configuration. It requires a little bit more knowledge about Wi-Fi and how it's operating, and it does require that you go through some hoops in order to configure them. It is okay if you understand Wi-Fi and you want to connect one up. If it is a single location, if it is supplementing just a few items in a weird spot in your home, it's not something I would count on anymore for mission critical. We're talking about something that is going to run you generally $40 or $50. It's not worth it, though, when you start to think about what the mesh systems do. And I have worked with mesh systems for a while, and I have a mesh system in my home. It is supplied actually by my internet service provider, and I allow them to handle most of the management of that. Why? Because in my particular case, I don't want to tinker with it. It just works. There are some abilities that I have, and I can dive in and I can do quite a bit of tweaking with their system. It is very similar to things like the Amazon Eero mesh Wi-Fi systems, and I've dealt with those. Keith has dealt with them a lot more. He's installed them many times, and it really fills in a lot of the different issues of a larger home or just getting the information throughout your home. So I strongly suggest something like those mesh networks. You will want to play around with your locations for the different units within the mesh. So if you've got two mesh units, you'll have the one located where your internet comes in. That's referred to as the demarcation point or DMARC. Your internet comes into the house at whatever speed that it is. And then the mesh Wi-Fi takes over from there. You have one unit that sits there. And then throughout the house, you might put, depending on the size of your home, a matter of one, two, maybe on a really large home, you might even put in three units to echo the signal along through the house. And with a network extender, it occupies your same Wi-Fi range. A network extender is just a repeater, whereas the mesh networks, they find ways to get the information back to the internet or out to the internet and back in through your home to your computer, and they utilize multiple channels. They utilize some of these mesh networks actually have a backbone where they're talking to each other, and that's a dedicated backbone versus utilizing that same signal area. Now, you're going to want to figure on your pricing. And you're going to want to figure based upon what speed that you have coming into your home. If you've got something like gigabit coverage for the internet, you're going to want to upgrade to one of the better sets of these mesh networks. So the basic set for Amazon Eero is basically $139. It'll support you up to 550 meg, and it will cover a decent size of coverage. They say up to 3,000 square feet off of two units. You may run into some problems with getting it that full area. I like the idea of three packs. And for a three pack of the Amazon Eero 6 Plus, you're going to wind up paying about $300. Now, that gives you a better bandwidth in that it's a gigabit setup, and it will give you a wider range throughout your home. They say coverage up to 4,500 square feet, and that's over on the Wi-Fi 6 Plus. There are others that are out there. I mean, we can start talking about the Wi-Fi 7, and that starts to really kick up the price, but it also kicks up the bandwidth. So Wi-Fi 7, we're talking about 10 gigabit, and that is distinctly a different layer, different level. And most of us do not have 10 gigabit coming in. You probably have, maybe you've got fiber, you've got 1 gig by 1 gig. But having that additional bandwidth means that you can have more devices out there. You can have a lot of different devices all vying for the internet. What do we talk about here? So the Amazon Eero system here is a lot more. The 3-pack. 10 gig, 7,500 square feet. Here's the key thing, 750 devices. This is almost in the range of what businesses need. And it's at a pricing that says this is far more for the office space than it is for home at nearly $1,400. But I'll tell you, it is so worth it on whatever level that you go with to consider mesh over the network extenders. They're pretty much on their way out. I don't anticipate we're going to be seeing them except on the bargain shelves for very much longer. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and sometimes a bit of the just general evolution of getting a job. And this is a world where we get a lot of tech involved with this, because we're going on to the various job boards. We're going on to LinkedIn. We're going on to Indeed.com and everything else that comes along with that. And one of the situations that I saw a number of years ago, the last time I was really actively looking for a job, I noticed that ghost jobs would show up. And what is a ghost job? That is a job listing that is never going to be filled. It is posted and then reposted, and applicants continue to apply in hopes of landing their next position. And then they move forward and they're later notified the company's decided to go in a different direction, and then that same position will pop up again a few weeks later. And this is a very problematic situation for the integrity of the whole idea of looking online for a job, where it gets posted and you may even apply and you may even go through an interview, and then you think you're doing great and it disappears. And then that job is posted again and again and again. Anything like this is not going to be legitimate. I want you to be aware that ghost jobs are out there, and they're increasing, and they are far more common than you might think. According to some studies that I came across, over half of the job postings online are ghost jobs. They have companies posting positions for weeks and months on end without any intention of hiring. Do I want to discourage you? No, I don't want you to feel beleaguered and overwhelmed by all of this. However, this is really affecting the whole concept of utilizing LinkedIn or Indeed or even a particular company, because it is disrespectful for those out there that are actively seeking employment. This is wasting time. It is creating an illusion of expanding headcount. It contributes to this overwhelming just malaise on the part of job hunters that are going into what feels like a very negative job market, a very misleading job market. We're already dealing with a lot of these different scam postings and a lot of these different situations where companies will have you go through 10 different interviews to get the position. Now, occasionally, yes, I do understand some companies look for going through and putting you through the paces of many interviews and you talking to a lot of different people, but we need to move away from that. We are capable as a society of sizing up the most likely person for the position within a matter of a couple of weeks, not a couple of months. One of the positions I worked for a number of years ago was very close to this. They had me work for them as a contractor for 3 months and then axed the entire team. And when I say the entire team, we're talking about 15 people. We're just summarily just sent packing. And then they hired the entire team again. And then axed all of them, because 3 months later, they rehired the entire team again. And then another 3 months later, the entire team again, and so forth and so on. And they were pretending that they were getting a job done. They were pretending that they were going to find the right match of everybody they needed to do exactly what they wanted and in a way that they wanted. And they were stretching. They were stretching really far. I was amazed when I first experienced that and encountered that, especially since it is a major name. If I told you the name, you'd be aghast at it. Look, I'm going to tell you, if you are hiring someone, you need to be upfront with them. You need to tell them why you're skipping over their resume. You need to give them some communication. If you don't have a position open, don't put out like dream items. Oh, we want this person and they've got to have 28 different certifications. You're not going to find somebody with the exact 28 certifications. Don't be playing around with posting things when you already plan on hiring the person that's internal. Don't go on out there and post a job and keep going through employees every 3 months. This is a world that everybody is going to start to fight back against, and that will leave you as an employer in the hot seat trying to find employees that are good or even perfect. And you're not going to find them because word will get around, especially in certain specialties where the people talk to each other. They're very well aware that, yes, I have a certain set of skills honed over a course of many years in my career, and I do a certain specific set of these, and I'm good at that. And if you keep skipping over it, yeah, you're going to find that word is going to get around and it's not going to be easy for you to even find a halfway decent employee. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, site ground. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The site ground salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com, for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Ron reached out to me. I want to get ahead in technology. What are the best things for improving my computer skills? I'll tell you. How I got into technology was by finding it as a hobby, finding it as a fascinating world. And I dove deep. I looked into all kinds of different things. And we're talking, this is a long time ago. We're talking 35-ish years ago. I was running a bulletin board system. I was maintaining my own system, my own hardware. I was looking into all of the different software that was out there. And I was experimenting in making my computer better, faster, making the bulletin board system that I was running faster. Most people don't even know what a bulletin board system is. They've been long gone. But it was that treatment of using the technology to communicate, to be better, to just open up new worlds for myself. And that is going to be probably the biggest driver for anybody to improve their tech skills. It's going to be getting out there and pushing the envelope of what you have and experimenting in areas that you find fascinating. And that can be in programming, that can be in design, it can be in the maintenance of a computer, it can be in things like overclocking it, pushing the hardware to its limits. There's a lot of different directions. The key issue is finding your passion and leveraging that, utilizing technology to go further. Along the way, yes, you should definitely look into whatever classes that are available out there for technology and see which ones line up in the directions you want to go in. So we have places like Pluralsight and LinkedIn Learning, and there are technology classes available through local colleges. Each of these different directions is perfectly fine. You want to push that envelope. You want to push yourself. And that's really best when you find something that's going to make you happier. If you are going to just dive into it because you want to make more money, you want to be better at the office and so forth, you aren't always going to find that passion area to really move forward as fast as you would with the passion areas. So check out YouTube. I think YouTube is a wonderful spot. Find out what people are doing with technology in whatever facet that you like. If you're fascinated with smart homes, dig into the smart home concept. If you're interested in 3D printing, dig into that. You don't have to have a smart home to learn more about it. You don't have to have a 3D printer to learn more about that. You can chase ahead in these areas. Find the passion. And that will help drive that usage of technology, how you are using it, and how you will use it in the future. That's my best suggestion for anybody who wants to know more about tech. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio, so I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with TheRadioFactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, The Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.